Thank you, Martin. We're very happy to have you with us. Claudio, I tried to unmute you. There we go.
You managed.
Thank
you. Not just for this, but for inviting me and to those who ask questions. Very quickly on hierarchy, I think if hierarchy means rule of law, if it means the possibility to take governments to court, if it means protection of the fundamental rights established by the treaties, we want to preserve that dimension of a hierarchy, and it can play also in our favor. Another question was, what do we do first? Look, on December the 1st, 1955, Rosa Parks refused to sit in the section of the bus for colored people. Was that established by anyone? Was just that? No, it's two things. One is the quality of the individual action. We know from the empirics of nonviolence that the power of one can be immense if that single action has a lot of quality. And secondly, and that's relevant for citizens organized around the takeover of Europe, is the capacity of an organization to pool the value of that individual action and connect and take the lesson. So being able to recognize, to network, and I love the fact what you said before that citizens, the takeover of Europe, it has a main function, which is to build a network, to connect different people, rather to superimpose a worldview on everyone. And this, I think, what comes first is the capacity to be the good reader that finds the local solution, the local symbol, the local struggle, and gives the European value so that other citizens understand what the value of that action is for them and connect. Europe is a scapegoat. It's a good question. Actually, empirically, we should acknowledge that when people mobilize, often is against Europe. I mean, Europe is not the hero of social mobilization, is the villain. It's always been a bit like that before it was corporate mobilization, like truck drivers, farmers, etc. And now we see citizens mobilizing against Europe. So we have to find the mobilization that matters for the European values that we care about. That's a very difficult point. Changing constitutions. Yes, but up to a point, because, again, as Calypso said, the process is as important as the final constitutional decision. I listened to the two contributions from Fili Costituenti from Italy. It's a great idea. However, you know, in Italy, youth unemployment is at 34.7%. Although the Constitution in Article 1 says that Italy is a republic grounded on labor, on work. I don't think the constitutions can describe reality. They are a very useful compass, but we also have to look at what Calypso said about participation, movements, and direct action. The final thing I want to touch upon is the short-term orientation of politicians. What we can do is to make it costly for their short-term horizon to carry on with action that flies in the face of the values we believe in. And this, again, it can be just one person with civil disobedience, can be a movement. And we have to make it costly to ignore, for example, evidence. We now have the benefit of a UN comment on the right to science. If that is used only by corporate lobbies for some regulation of technologies they've invested in, that would be the case. But we have to make it costly to ignore science, to ignore evidence, and to take decisions that are not grounded in any possible motivation or reasons that we can understand. So again, it's also up to us to what extent some decisions can ignore the preferences of citizens or not. Is our silence that makes it or doesn't make it electorally costly or cost in terms of popularity and reputation?
Thank you, Claudio. As